All right, welcome to the first of its kind, world-changing manufacturers network. Lisa Ryan has her ears to the ground and her heart in the game. Get ongoing education and new connections right here with Lisa and the manufacturers network. Buckle your seat, listen, and spread the word. Here's Lisa.
Hey, it's Lisa Ryan. Welcome to the Manufacturers Network podcast. I'm excited to introduce our guest today, Glenn Akromoff. Glenn is the esteemed CEO of Akromoff LLC. With over three decades of experience, Glenn shares transformative insights on human-centered manufacturing, fostering winning teams, and harnessing generational opportunities. Drawing parallels from his municipal government success, he shares actionable strategies to enhance workplace culture in manufacturing. So, Glenn, welcome to the show.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
So share with us a little bit about your background and what led you to doing what you're doing.
I started in municipal government, as you mentioned, actually in my hometown in upstate New York, as a temporary worker and in the field. And I did that. I moved through my career and got into leadership and realized that through a lot of mentorship, I took that journey. I realized I was pretty good at building teams. And so started doing that as part of my work and was able to create the program and process that we're going to talk about today. Really what motivated me is I was a frontline employee and I was in a toxic work environment and the environment didn't know how to fix itself. And I had a couple of friends who succumbed to that toxic work environment. One of them, I don't know where he is, and one took his own life. And that motivated me to realize that work is important. Our workplace and the culture and how we go about doing it is incredibly important. So that's what led me in this journey. And I eventually started about eight years ago, started as a consultant to help not only local government, but companies work through their challenges and help their people become happy and productive.
Awesome. Yeah. Wow. That's quite a story and so important when we look at how important culture is. We think about money and money is certainly important, especially today. But when you get the culture, it's not the number one be all end all that people think it is. When you're looking at building a winning team, it's crucial in any industry, but especially in manufacturing, where it's so important that we find the workers that we need to get the job done and then keep them. So what are some of the strategies that you use to foster that type of team cohesion and ensure that every member feels valued and motivated?
Yeah, I think there are a couple of key things. Number one is you mentioned money, and in business, that is one of our goals, right? That needs to be, but it is not a purpose. And people need to focus on a purpose. As individuals, we're meant to serve a certain purpose. Individually, it's different for each of us. And then as companies, we have a purpose to serve in the market and in the world. And the key is to get those two aligned. And when you get them aligned as individuals, then as a team, then things start to flow really well. The other part is and in manufacturing, as you mentioned, it's incredibly important to not only find great people, but put them in the place where they can succeed the best. And that process is really important in identifying what skill sets are, what their gifts are, what they're passionate about. And then they will perform at their top level. And sometimes when we go into companies, that's what we find is people are misplaced. And sometimes it's moving them in a different spot in the company and they thrive and so does the company.
And I think a lot of times in manufacturing, because especially if you have more unskilled labor or semi-skilled labor, people don't realize that they want to feel a part of the mission. They also want to find their purpose in the organization. So what are some ways that you've seen your clients really instill that sense of purpose in jobs that are not necessarily specialized?
Yeah, I started my career that way, right? I was a maintenance worker in the field, working in the streets and the stormwater and all of that. And that can be learn skills, but it's not a skilled profession, especially when you start. But one of the things that we talk about when I'm working with clients specifically to that genre is that when you're taking care of the road, people use that road every day. And a typical city is 250,000 people are using those roads. And so you impact all of them. You impact all of their families because they need to get home safe. And if you don't do your job, they don't. So I think in that context, that's really what you're trying to do is help them understand what their role is and how important it is. Because the company doesn't run without everybody being involved. And when they know that, wait a minute, what I do is an impact to everybody from the CEO on down. I think it becomes, they know their value, they know they're valued, and then motivation is much easier from there.
Yeah, that's so important to really stress the end result. I know I was recently speaking at a conference for precision metal parts. So basically they make hundreds of thousands and millions of pieces of things that go everywhere they're all exactly the same. But it was just so funny that these guys, they walk on airplanes and they see the little button that makes the seat go back. And they're like, I made that.
Right.
And if their employer hadn't told them they made it, to let them know that you're not just making pieces parts, you're making components that we use every day, like you saw on the road, you're creating a safe road for hundreds of thousands of people to drive on every year. And if we could just have that little bit of a conversation, it makes a huge difference.
Yeah. I grew up near a plant that made brakes for vehicles. And a lot of my friends still work there. And that was one of the things that they didn't talk about. But when I had a friend who he and I have talked over the years, and that's what he started selling is, hey, if you don't do your job and the product isn't consistent, that means somebody doesn't stop. And when you put it in that context, you realize everything I do in this plant goes to that mission. And I'm making sure that car stops so that someone can be safe, changes the whole context of the grind and the work that you do every day.
Yeah, it certainly does. It's like that old story about the three bricklayers, and the one was that they were asked what they were doing, and the one said, laying bricks, and the other one said, I'm building a wall, and the third one said, I'm building a cathedral.
Right.
So it's like how you're looking at it and the importance of that end result. I think, again, in that human-centered, that we're not just looking at our workers as another cog in the wheel of getting something made or done. We're looking at that person holistically. What lights them up as a human being? Where are their skills? Where can, like you said, even moving them into different places, just, I think it's all in paying attention, right?
Yeah, I think that's exactly what it is. It's not just acting like you care. It's truly caring about each individual. And when you do, you pay attention. And it's not about some companies. I've worked with teams as big as 300. So it's really hard to get to know everybody individually and know their kids and all that sort of thing. It's not about that. It's about knowing what, like you said, what lights them up. What makes them smile? What makes them happy? What brings them to work every day? Sometimes that's because they have, it's not necessarily all the purpose of the work. Their purpose is that they have a son at home who is doing well and needs them to be there and needs them to provide for them. So it's knowing what that is and helping them connect the two. And I think you're right, paying attention and caring. And that's something in his leaders recently, because most leaders are not only leading, they're doing, because we're down people and we don't have all the resources. And I get that. I totally understand that. All the functions I'm filling are that way. But your number one thing has to be focusing on your people and what they're doing.
Yeah. And the other thing that's interesting about focusing on people is that we're so generationally diverse right now. We have, you know, for a long time, we were talking about millennials and they're like in their 40s now, for goodness sake. So they're at the peak of their career. But now you still have younger millennials and Gen Z coming in, and they're wired differently than the other generation. So what are you seeing as far as, again, are there differences that you're seeing in the different generations as far as the, how they need to be motivated, or what are you seeing?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's a positive in the workplace that the millennials started it in that we talked when they were first coming into the workforce, how they'd ghost you and they would just take off and I don't want to work here and be gone. And then you'd call them and they'd say, oh yeah, I quit 2 days ago. So it just, it still happens, but not as much. But I would say that because of that, they've started a movement, a change in the workplace and how you need to lead them. They will not tolerate poor culture like Gen X and like the boomers. We went in it and we did it and that's the way you did it. They don't do that. They're like, I'm not putting up with this. And they will say so.
Yep.
And I think that is a positive in my mind, and that we can make positive changes. They're going to tell you what's going on. You don't have to figure it out as much. I have found the Gen Zers I'm starting to see trends that are similar to the boomers or before the boomers, where there are some things that they do. They're not as noisy about things as the millennials. They will share, but they'll only share once and then they're done and then they will move on. They don't have a problem doing that. That loyalty thing that is gone and in some ways is a positive is not in them, but they clearly want to fulfill a purpose. And if they don't feel like they are, they're going to go find one. And you want them, if you want to keep them, you need to be able to focus on that. I think the other part, the trend with the Gen Zers is they are not learning how to be in the workplace anywhere. I know for me, I learned how to be in the workplace because I grew up in farm country and I worked on a farm when I was 13, 14 years old. So you learn how to answer to the boss and certain things. They're coming into workplace totally green with that. They don't know what HR does. They don't know what finance does. They don't know how to fill out the timesheets and all those other things. And what I saw when they first came in is everyone was frustrated by it, and many still are. You have to teach them. I use John Wooden as an example, when a basketball coach for UCLA in the 70s. When freshmen came in to his program, he taught them how to put on their uniform first. And that it was about the attention to detail and knowing that everything's important. We need to do that with our new employees and plan to do it, not lament it, not throw them out to the wolves and throw them on the floor right away. You need to take the time to teach them how to be in the workplace because they don't know and it's not their fault.
It's been an interesting transition over the last decade or so that I've been focusing on manufacturing, because it's that at first it was like, these young whippersnappers, they have to adjust to what we do. It's up to them to change for us. And in this post-pandemic economy, and I think it's starting to seep through, that people are realizing, you know what? If we're going to attract these younger people to enter manufacturing, we need to change for them. Because you're absolutely right. As baby boomers, Gen Xers, we just put up with it because that was work. That's the way it's supposed to be. Right. That's why they call it work. Now you have a bad day and they don't feel heard and stuff. They have so many more options than they used to have. They're, you know what? I'm done with this. I think I'm going to go drive for Uber for a couple weeks and find myself and then do something else.
Right.
So it really is up to the organization to change their philosophy, to listen to their people, because people coming into the workforce now see the world differently than the people who have been working in that plant for 10 or 20 years.
Absolutely. It's like I said, I applaud it. It's changing the workplace in a positive way for all of us. And I also think what it's really pushing to the fore is that for the veterans on in the workplace, they can teach now. They need to teach, but they get to all of the knowledge and things that they built up over a 30, 40 year career. The Gen Zers and millennials, young millennials, want to learn it. They will learn it. And they want to learn it. They're just going to learn it differently. And that is your legacy. I think that's the thing that we forget is that you did this for this long. You're getting to your end of your career. Your legacy is giving it to the next generation and watching what they do with it. And I think our veteran workers are starting to realize that's a good thing and that it's important. And they're starting to transition into that. And that's a wonderful thing when you see it in an organization start to happen where the veterans are starting to teach the young people and they get this synergy going. It's magic.
Yeah. And again, and I think back in the day, you had the veteran workers being afraid that these people were going to come and take their job. But if I love that word legacy, because if we can share with our tenured employees that, listen, this is your legacy. You've been here for 30 years. There's a pretty good chance that you're not going to be here for another 30 or 40 years. And the work you do is so good. We want to continue your legacy. So by you sharing what you're doing, because like I said, like you said, they're starved to learn. They want to know, and they want to know the history of the company, and they want to know how everything got started and why everything got started. They may want to change things because they see the world differently, but being able to share that foundation of company history and company mission and why we do what we do, that's a big part of that human-centered leadership because we're connecting on that human level.
Absolutely. 100%.
So when it comes to, again, purpose-driven leadership, it's a term that we kind of bandy around a bit, and it means different things to different people. So what does it mean to you, and how has this philosophy influenced your decision-making with what you do at Akromov?
For me, it's every company, every organization is built to serve a human in some way, whether directly or indirectly. When you put the human at the center of it, and we've been talking a lot about the employees, but when you do that, the employees, that will transfer directly to your customer experience, whether it's in direct service or in manufacturing. The product is going to be better and it's going to have a real impact. I talk about this a lot in that in the context of interviewing, because I help a lot of people work through getting jobs. And I talk about when you sit down to do your resume, if you're in a negative mood, even if the words are the right words, the energy around it will not get you the job. I believe it's the same thing. And when you're making a product, if everybody is in a positive vein, the product will be better just because it has a different energy. And I know that people will say that's a little woo, and it is, but I've watched it happen on a regular basis. So how do we do that in Akromov is that, first of all, we live that. We do that in our company. We have the same struggles. We have a team of five of us, and we have the same struggles that every team does. We don't always get along. We don't always see things eye to eye. We have four different generations. So in five people. So,
wow.
Yeah. So it is really we have to pay attention, and we always come back to what's important to each individual. And that is always part of our, like when we're doing staff meetings, we just had one, we have our internal staff meeting with the core group. There's three of us yesterday. And we start with not how our clients are doing or all of that sort of stuff. We talk about the emotions of what's going on, both ours and our clients. That's how we start every meeting. And that helps us keep, and I will tell you, originally, it was intentional. Now it just is natural for us. That's how we start. And one of our consultants, real quick story, one of our consultants is working with a company, a small construction company, and they have two owners, and the two of them are really struggling, and one of them is struggling in his personal life. And it's, of course, it impacts the company, right? That's the reality of it. So we talked about we started our meeting talking about where he was and how our consultant, how Josh is helping him walk through that to get to the company, because we believe in the entire human being, not just pieces of them. So that's how we go about doing it. And Josh, you go, we're helping the client become a better company, and we are. But our consultant Josh spent 6 hours with this owner working through their personal issues, because we know in the end that's going to help the company. And that's how we do it. And we do that every time. And we will set aside what our goals were for the day to make sure that everyone is in the right headspace. And when the leaders start doing that, so we know that this owner is going to start doing that and behaving that way because we modeled it, we taught him how to do it, the company will thrive. His new people that he brings in will feel that and know that he's a human being and he's got his good and his bad, and two, that he's going to recognize that they're human beings and give them grace.
Yeah, that's a powerful story. I think about when you have an owner of a company, an owner, C-suite leader, there's not a lot of people that they can talk to, that they can confide in, just because they can't really tell their subordinates what they're feeling, or they don't think they can. So to just spend that amount of time getting to the heart of what was going on with a person in their personal life and kind of working through that, giving them an outlet. So I think that's so important for leaders to understand too, is that you don't have to do this by yourself. Maybe there's not people within your organization that you can confide to, but there's plenty of people out there that can help you get through the muck personally so that you can better your business. Because you're right, you bring that negative energy into a business. I always say in my programs that you can feel culture. You walk into an organization and you can feel, do people like working here? Are people laughing and joking and smiling with each other and making eye contact as you walk through the plant? Or are they looking down and trying to be as invisible as possible? And somebody's going to say, I don't want to work here. So it's up to us, that woo stuff, that there's nothing woo about it.
I know that's the old, I think that has been the way to avoid doing it, is to say that's, I can't do that. Yes, you can. And it doesn't matter what your style is. You can be very direct in your style and still do that. It's not about the group hug and the trust fall, right? It's not about that. It's just about sincerely caring about your people. And I've seen some of the, what I would say is some of the toughest people that on the surface be able to do that successfully, just because they cared. You weren't going to get a group hug. I have a really great story about that. I had a guy that I was working with, and he was that way, but he cared about his people and they knew it. And one of his mantras that really they took in a positive way is he would say at the end of the day, thank you for not sucking today. And of course, for us, without the context, they're like, wow, that's harsh. When they heard that from him, they lit up like a Christmas tree. They were so happy, because for him, that was telling them, you did an awesome job today. It's the way he voiced it. And that was their, when they got one of those, you know, they would be flying high for weeks.
Wow.
And it was just the culture that they created and the way he had to do it because of who he was, but it worked for them. And they taught new people when they came in what it really meant. And it just was, it doesn't have to be all rainbows and hugs. It can be whatever you create it to be.
So if somebody's listening to this podcast and they're not quite there yet, they haven't built strong relationships, they haven't really gotten to the human-centered part that we've been talking about, what do you think is your best way to get people started? When you first start working with an organization, you know that there's some challenges there. What are the specific recommendations or activities or exercises, whatever you do, that can help somebody start to get on track?
I think the first thing that it happens is identifying that there are problems. But a lot of times we put our head in the sand and we go, yeah, we're doing the best we can, even though you know you're not. And I think that's the first recognition, is this doesn't feel right. Things aren't going as well as I think they should. As a leader or an employee, let's be clear, this is, everyone has a responsibility on this. Hey, this isn't working. We can do better. That's the first start. And that's usually what, for us, that's not what triggers us to come in. Excuse me. What triggers us to come in is when they can't fix it. They can't find a way to fix it and they bring us in. But yeah. I think that's the first part, is, hey, this isn't working right. And there are a couple signs to that. One, your turnover. Turnover rate tends to be higher now than it was 10 years ago, and it probably always will be. But when you're turning over half your staff annually, that's a warning sign that's telling you. The other thing is, there's a couple complaints that you'll hear, and there's three of them. One is, we don't communicate well. That is a buzzword to say, I'm not being heard.
Okay.
The second one is, we need more accountability here. And what that's saying is that the rules are different for each individual, so we don't have fairness or consistency. And then the third one is, I don't feel like I have a future here, or some vein of that, which is telling you, you're not developing me as an individual. So when you hear any or all of those three things, you've got issues, and your employees are telling you got issues. So listen, and pay attention. I had a company that we're working with now. They heard that. And the first thing they did before they even hired us or even talked to us, they did an employee survey. And they did it anonymously, and they got real honesty. And it hurt them. They were not happy about it. But they realized, okay, we were right. This isn't going right, and we need to find out how to fix it. And eventually we joined in, we did an assessment, and we assessed a number of areas. Number one's culture, but also we assess structure and systems and processes, as well as external forces. Then we give recommendations specific to each of those areas about where they can improve. Culture's always first, of course, because I think everything's built on. But those other things impact it. And I think they're, but if you do those, if you're hearing those, any of those three things, do that. The other part is, like I said earlier, your leaders are doers now too. They're not just being a leader. You've got things to do. You don't always have the time. It's not that you can't do it. It's that you don't have the time to do it. So ask for help. There are a lot of people out there doing great work that can help you. Ask for help.
Yeah. Wow, this has been really powerful. It looks like you and I can talk about this culture stuff all day long. If somebody did want to get a hold of you and continue the conversation, what's the best way for them to do that?
We're on all social media, but we're at akromoff.com, and there are some tools and some things there that if you can use them, please take them. They're for your use. I do a lot of podcasts, so our podcasts are on there. We have a number of other resources, and that's a great place. And contact us. We love to hear from you. I also have a book that explains the process called The Human-Centered Team, which you can find on the website. If you can use that, awesome. Our whole mission is to change the workplace and thereby change the world. And since that's our mission, if you use our stuff and you can use it for free, we're happy with that.
All right. Awesome. Glenn, thank you so much for joining me today. It's been a pleasure getting to know you.
Likewise. I appreciate being here.
I'm Lisa Ryan, and this is the Manufacturers Network podcast. We'll see you next time.
Thanks for listening to the Manufacturers Network podcast. Do me a favor and share this podcast with your friends and colleagues so we can grow this network and connect more fantastic folks just like you. You can either send your buddies to the website at manufacturers-network.com or share the Manufacturers Network podcast on your LinkedIn, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, or wherever you and your industry friends hang out. The bigger and faster we grow the network, the stronger and deeper the community we'll all have. Thanks again, and I appreciate you.